Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly podcast, where we critically assess some topical developments with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast I'll be reviewing stories up to Friday the 6th of July. Joining me in this task is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello there, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
Okay, in our first story, water regulator Ofwat has unveiled a shake-up of its price review methodology with the aim of forcing providers to be more customer-focused. Under measures announced on the 3rd of July, water firms will be required to 1. Set out proposals to share the benefits of financial gains with their customers, 2. Explain in their business plans how dividend policies from 2020 to 2025 will take account of customer delivery, and 3. Set out transparently how performance-related executive pay will reward delivery improvements. Ofwat Chief Executive Rachel Fletcher said, quote, "The decisions some water companies have made on dividends, financial structures and top executive pay have damaged customer trust. Through these measures, we are strengthening the incentive on companies to improve their performance for customers and cutting the rewards that come from financial engineering," close quote. What's your reaction to Ofwat's intervention here?
I think there seems to be an understanding, certainly on the part of Rachel Fletcher, that you actually get what you measure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want increased customer satisfaction, not only do you need to have a way of measuring it, but that's what you need to reward. And we've been seemingly rewarding all the wrong things. And anything that lends itself to financial engineering as a solution that leads to a reward is obviously flawed.
How would you define financial engineering?
I think one of the good examples of this is some of the responses that came for the gender pay gap. Okay, we'll call it financial engineering, but the spirit of it is, if you want to close your gender pay gap, for example, just employ a lot of men at low wages.
Yeah.
And then that will impact the average. So it's gamification, it's playing the game and not the spirit of the game. Mm. Now, of course, there will be new ways around the measures, but it is a good start thinking about the customer. I think Carillion has given everybody a bit of a scare. What are we rewarding? Because in that case, we weren't rewarding good governance.
So this is very much an effort to restore ethics to the industry.
Well, whether just by saying we're going to reward customers, we're going to get more ethical behaviours, maybe a bit of a leap. But I think it's a reminder to all of them what you're actually there for.
Yeah. Okay. In our second story, which also looks quite heavily at customer delivery, a massive new healthcare partnership in the US has enlisted the services of someone with no prior corporate experience to be its CEO. The as-yet-unnamed organisation has been set up by Jeff Bezos at Amazon, Warren Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway, and Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan to provide health cover for their firm's combined workforce of 1.2 million people. In order to shake up delivery models and improve outcomes, the provider has hired Boston-based surgeon and academic Dr. Atul Gawande, who is primarily known as the head of think tank Ariadne Labs, which specialises in researching innovative approaches to healthcare. However, he has never led an organisation of this size before. Is this a risky move?
I think everybody's on the quest to be a disruptor, aren't they? Mm-hmm. We want to do things so radically differently. How are we going to do this? Well, obviously not by giving the jobs to the people who have grown up in those more traditional ways of thinking.
Yep.
So you can understand why they've come up with what seems to be a brilliantly innovative solution to a problem. We want it to be different, so let's get somebody whose experience to date has really been about thinking differently.
Mm-hmm.
So he does bring experience. Undoubtedly, it's not that working in an organization and all the things that go with that experience, dealing with stakeholders, etc. How successful he will be is how much he's prepared to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Because that great strategic vision about how you disrupt, how you'll do things differently, you've still got systems, processes, all manner of operational things to consider, and most importantly, the people who run that. And if they cannot see the sense of what you're doing or the resistance to it is so great, it will be subverted in so many different ways and it won't happen. And then it will appear that it was the fact that he hadn't worked in organisations before that was the problem.
Yeah.
And we'd lose sight of what might be really good ideas. It's got to be his understanding that you have to bring people with you on this. And they don't necessarily see your great ideas as being great. And we've also got that thing that so often, especially in huge organisations that have been around for a while, oh, we tried that 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and it didn't work. And that sort of jaundiced view of things, again, it's a resistance, it's a barrier to change, and he's got to be mindful of that.
Yes, indeed. And this will be an interesting one to watch. All right. Next up, Business Insider has published a fascinating interview with US entrepreneur Eddie Liu, which provides some superb insights into how startup founders deal with failure. Now, Liu is currently riding high with his business partner Daishin Sugano as co-founder of online sneakers reseller GOAT. But the path to his present success has been anything but smooth. Indeed, he and Sugano spent a decade wading through a series of costly flops, such as 99-cent phone apps that nobody wanted, golfing apparel that no one wanted to wear, and a cream puff franchise that slowly deflated. Even the early days of GOAT were blighted by a Black Friday promotion that backfired because the firm didn't have enough stock. Liu said, quote, "It's probably very unlikely you're going to get it right on the first time, or the second time, or the third time," close quote. What does this reveal about how leaders absorb the lessons of failure?
Well, I think this is a real testimony to the idea that you back a person rather than an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody has that entrepreneurial zeal and that desire for success, then they'll change the idea if it doesn't work. If they'd stuck with their 99-cent app, they'd still be unsuccessful. It was their entrepreneurial zeal and their real openness to learning from failure. So don't over-engage your ego with the product that you're trying to develop or the service that you're trying to sell.
Yeah.
Think about what it is you want, which in this case was autonomy and freedom and the ability to take an idea and see what they could do with it. That's what's driving them.
I think the entrepreneurial viewpoint is very different in terms of this is a bunch of experiments rather than this is what I'll be doing till I'm 65.
I think it's why they can't really retire, so many of them.
Mm.
And I heard recently about somebody, one of the pound shop chains, buying his shops back. And you do hear about that. They sell it. They see somebody else not doing it as well as they would have liked themselves. And they take it back and have another go.
Mm. There's something quite moving about that as well, isn't there? You know, this is my baby, etc.
Yes, and also I suppose the new challenge that once it was successful, sell it, no real challenge there. But having it in a turnaround situation, there's the excitement again. That's where they get the energy from, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and finally, Gareth Southgate has laid ghosts of the past to rest with the England World Cup squad's dramatic progress into the tournament's quarterfinals via a penalty shootout, of all things, in their round of 16 match against Colombia. Now, the interesting thing about this podcast is that some of our listeners may not hear it till after the upcoming quarterfinal against Sweden, so that's very much up in the air. But what would you like to say about how Southgate has distinguished himself through his management style?
We often talk about the importance of role modelling, and when he speaks, he does not take the credit for himself. There are so many we statements, and then when you see the individual players being interviewed, they repeat those sorts of messages.
Yeah.
So it's never about me, it's always about us. They're so keen to give other members of the squad credit. And they're just mirroring the behaviour that they're seeing from Gareth Southgate. Whether win or lose on Saturday, there is so much to be admired about his leadership style.
Yeah. I mean, he seems from his post-match interviews to be refreshingly ego-free.
He does, but maybe, and we've been talking about failure and coming back from that, maybe that misadventure in his own penalty shootout gave him a humility.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a failure, he came back with the resilience to learn from that. And maybe he's thinking, well, what would have helped me at the time? How can I provide those to my players? And of course, the other great thing about this squad is that they're all so young and excited.
Yeah.
There isn't that jaundice that we've done this, been here. And I think one of them actually said, I've never been in this position before.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
How exciting is that?
Well, fingers crossed for Saturday, huh?
Yeah, let's hope it's something like 4-2 to England.
That would be very nice indeed. I think there's a lot of people out there who would very much appreciate that. Okay, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Thanks very much, Matt.